Hello, Jane.
Hello.
Sadly, not a very nice call this is going to be.
It's going to be one of those. And there's a bit of an anxiety, I suppose, that I would have, that people are almost resigned to cuts.
Yes. Yeah.
And people hear figures bandied about and don't really appreciate the gravity of them, which is one of the reasons why I was so shocked when I saw the actual numbers of jobs, people's livelihoods that we're going to be running a red pen through over the next 3 years within Merseyside Police. And when I saw the documents, I was so angry and I suppose upset is the word, that I felt I had to share it with the public to make sure that people understand just how impossible it's going to get. I believe the situation is becoming untenable.
Jane, what I can't get my head round at all is that we're living in a very scary world.
Yep.
We're being told about what's happening with ISIS and happening with our own people.
Yep.
Surely this is a time we increase the police force.
Well, I certainly would very strongly argue that we maintain at the status quo. We've been making dramatic changes over the last 4 to 5 years. The force on Merseyside, and I speak about Merseyside because it's the one I know best. They've been working so hard to make themselves ultra-efficient, to strip away anything that might be done better and cheaper and differently. They've been making those improvements. And yet here we are. They've been required to say to HMIC and through them to the government how they will balance their budget over the next 3 years. And from 2016, they will have to lose about 900 of the, what we call the administrative staff, but that's a phrase that, again, is misunderstood by many people. These are the call handlers, the analysts, the people who do the preparation of court papers, which it's essential work. And if this work isn't done by civilian staff, then police officers will have to be deployed to do them because the work needs to be done.
We had the chief constable on recently, and he puts a brave face on, but he's shaking his head in despair.
Yes, and the striking thing, and what grieves me so much, is just how courageous this force is in the face of these cuts. And as you've just said, the challenges that they face. People say, well, crime is going down, so we don't need so many police officers, but that isn't true. Even the official figures are now starting, sadly, to show an increase. And that's partly because all of the joined-up work, the real combined effort that has been made over 10 years by local authorities, by youth offending teams, by social work teams, by youth workers, diverting young people away from crime, getting them involved in other things, getting them to study, stay on at school, go on to university, that sort of work, that's all beginning to crumble. And the effect of that is going to be, I fear, it's going to be increase in crime of all types. We're seeing increases in violent crime being recorded and increases in sexual assaults and rapes. Very dangerous crimes give me cause for concern. And what I want to see is a moratorium. If the government is suggesting that in maybe 2 years' time, even they might consider easing up on austerity, then I think, well, I'm absolutely clear that that must apply to the police. And if they would do that, then I think we could manage because we are more efficient and the force is definitely as effective as perhaps it ever has been.
You see, what upsets me also is we're not talking about just burglaries. We're not talking about the crime that we've lived with.
Yeah.
The crime now on the internet and what's happening is incredibly time-consuming because these websites are set up in different countries. You can't get letters from the company. You'll get it. I use as an example, the police helped me take something down, which was horrendous. And it took forever to do. So at the time when we're losing officers, it's getting a harder job for them to do.
It is, absolutely. You know, just last week you had that very interesting discussion about the growth in our understanding of child sexual exploitation and the risks our children face from being groomed and abused through the internet. And we know that if the police approach a perpetrator, they can actually, in going into the person's property and their home and seizing their property, they can come away with over 10 different devices that the individual has been using on the internet to groom young children and to store images and so on. Those 10 computers, iPads, phones, the gadgets that we all of us have these days, they all need analysing. They all have to be looked at and checked and then catalogued, and all of that detail has to be done. And that's just one. And there can be hundreds of such perpetrators.
Just getting away from the email for a minute while you're talking about that. Thank you very much for getting involved with that, by the way. I think it's incredible that you put some money to help child sexual exploitation. I think it's really important. And I've written a big piece in my column this week in The Echo because it's got to be talked about. It can't. What I learned from that programme, Jane, which I was really surprised about, was, and I never thought about it, these grown-up children that were in our studio are grown-up, but they're not.
Yes.
They don't know what's going on. Yes. We think they do, but they in fact don't.
I was at the meeting when we had a presentation from one of Merseyside's detectives who took them through the impact of child sexual exploitation, what we mean by it, and different cases that he knew of and had worked with. And these young people, as you say, young adults, watched in rapt attention, and they were shocked. There were elements of it that shocked them. But at the same time, they said, we have to know about this. You've got to tell us. Now, that's just one new growth area of crime, which really probably didn't get the attention it needed to have done in the past. But now we are all much more aware of the risk. So that is a growing area of challenge for the police. It is completely the wrong time to be moving to a point where we make our force less efficient and we cut the people who are performing the services for us beyond the point at which it's safe for us here on Merseyside.
When you first came on, you said that people are sort of immune to it.
Yeah.
But what can they actually do about it? I mean,
they can challenge the people who are standing for election in this general election. This election is going to be critically important for the future of many public services, but in particular the service that I am so close to and love so much is the police service. It is perhaps the most important service that a government is required to perform, and that is to keep us safe and enforce the law. And I have a statutory duty to, in law it says, to secure an effective and efficient police force. I believe it is rapidly approaching the point where it will not be possible for me to do that, and I have no powers. I cannot raise local taxes without the government permitting me to do it. It's the government forcing us down this route. We have to change the policy or we have to change the government.
So tell us about the email. When did you come across it?
Well, it was a document that was in a digital format. I think it's a regular thing that they do once a year after the budget process has gone through. But this year, because for the first time they've put figures in to demonstrate what their workforce predictions will be going beyond the point at which we know for certain what the budget is going to be. So we've been told pretty much what our budget's going to be. We've already just settled it for this coming year, so 2015 up to March 2016. We know where we are. We've set the budget, the precepts all being gathered in by the local councils. But beyond that, we start to move into very severe cuts, millions and millions of pounds being taken out of the budget. And beyond 2017, we move to a position where the numbers of redundancies that would have to be made if the force is required to keep making these cuts, then those figures start to climb into the hundreds. And I was really shocked when I saw that the number of staff that were proposed to be lost over that period was over 900, wow. Half of the total number of staff that we will have at March next year. That's just the, when I say staff, I don't mean police officers. I'm talking here about the administrative staff. And the reason why it's so important to be aware of this is everybody focuses on the police officers. But as I said at the beginning, yeah. Those jobs are absolutely essential. They have to be done. It is far better that they're done by civilian staff who are generally cheaper to employ because they don't have the same training and the same terms and conditions or the same costs that go with their post. And we'll be forcing inefficiencies back into a force that is not in a position to be able to cope with them.
Are any of the other forces any better off than us?
Well, it's interesting. Since the press release that I put out this morning was tweeted, and a number of other people, Twitterati, have started to come back to me and mm-hmm. say they're aware of this in many other forces. I just feared that here on Merseyside, I want the public to understand that if this continues, what will happen by stealth almost is they will have their local force dismantled and they will start to see regional forces and national forces developing to a much greater extent than they are now, because that's the only way they'll be able to manage the really serious end of crime. So the National Crime Agency is likely to grow, the regional organisations are likely to grow, and I've been a great supporter of the Regional Organised Crime Unit, which tackles some of our most serious organised crime networks. But actually, I want people to have a chance to have their say. And I don't think people on Merseyside support the move to a more regional force. If you go on the continent, you see exactly what that means. Tiers of police who become disconnected from the local communities and only go in when there's something serious has happened, and they police an area that they're not otherwise connected with.
I still can't get my head around the fact that we're living in a world where we need more police, we need more forces, we need more people to protect us, more fire services. I don't understand the mentality of these people.
Well, Pete, that's why when I saw the figures, I thought, oh, my word. If I felt I had a responsibility to share the figures with people so that they would be able to challenge all the parties. Because I'm not sure that all, even my own party, the Labour Party, I'm not sure that there's really an understanding there of just how serious the situation is. And I wanted to get the message out there and ask people to make sure that they use their vote. And that way they can influence the direction that we take in the future. And just, it's such a precious thing, and people often dismiss it. But you can really make a difference at this election. And if it goes the wrong way, we are likely to have a force that will be unrecognisable from the one that I was elected to serve.
Hey, is there anything that all of you can do communally if all the police got together?
You mean the PCCs?
Yes.
Well, we're meeting actually on Wednesday, and I'm hoping that there's going to be a minister there so that I can actually challenge them and ask them what they think they're doing. I do this regularly, but I will not accept that their complacency is acceptable. I have to challenge it, and I have to make sure they understand the pressure that we're working in. And I have a fear that they're disconnected from it because they are conservatives. They represent shire counties where the cuts have not been as severe as they are being felt by urban forces. And we need to be absolutely clear, and I've been making that point to them, and collectively we do as a group of PCCs, even those who are not of my party, those who are conservative and independents, they are all saying we are very worried about the situation in 2 years' time.
Right, I'm going to make you aware of something if you don't know about it, which you might get a shock if you don't know about it, but I'm sure you do know about it.
I better get a pen.
Right. The programme is called ESMCP, the Emergency Service Mobile Communication Programme. which is it's going to be replaced, and they're going to replace the dedicated high resilient communication system with the mobile network. There's a reason I'm telling you the technical side. I've got it written down so I know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
To save costs and using a commercial mobile network instead. Now, the implications of that are this. This system that's in place now, and they're about to lose their contract, overrides everything.
Yeah.
So if I dial on 999, I get through. With this new system they're going to put in place to save money, the government, the commercial mobile network, I can be in a situation where there is no signal and I will not get, I repeat, not get 999.
Well, that is a shock to me, and that is news. I will...
Well, what I will do is I will send you... I'll get Jonathan to take your mobile. I will send you this actual piece that I've got. I've spoken to John Murphy. I've spoken to Bernard Hogan Howe because I am absolutely horrendously concerned about that.
Right.
Imagine you in the country and you're seeing somebody being beaten to death and you can't get 999 because of a new system because it fades out.
Gosh, that, I mean, that is genuinely frightening, isn't it? And I think it needs to be looked at. If John Murphy's already aware of it, I'm sure that he's looking into it too. I'm seeing him later this week. We'll talk about it then, Pete, and we'll have a look at it. But these decisions need to be out there in the public mind so that they're aware of the consequences of cuts. These cuts, it's particularly at this point now, going forward, after all of the efficiencies have been made and we have really worked hard, working with the trade unions, working with the staff, to bring about the most efficient force that we can. We're now reaching the point where we're going to tip over the edge and start to reintroduce inefficiencies. And if that kind of decision that you're describing is being made, we're not only going to have inefficiencies locally, we're going to be ineffective, and we're not going to be able to help people when they need it most.
It's like they've got a downer on the police service in general, just to save money.
I know that it's been said to me by police officers that they feel that that is the case.
Yeah.
There's no doubt that there was a need to look at the efficiencies. And we are making improvements that actually will help the way that the force works and enable them to work better. I mean, we're doing some investment in their estate, and that's going to help the way that they function, because they'll be in better buildings, better locations, working together more closely. And we needed to do that, but it's no point us doing all of that and then taking away so many of the people doing the essential work that we have to take people off the streets, police officers, taken off the streets and sent into offices to do the work that are currently being done, the jobs that are currently being done by civilians. That is that's the politics of madness, isn't it?
It seems ridiculous, and it seems that for the sake of money, they're now putting human beings in this country, the people that vote them in, it seems that they're putting their lives at risk, a terrible risk.
If you think what's happened to the NHS, how much more chaotic it is, in terms, if you're like me and you're working with some of the managers within the police force and you're trying to improve the sharing of information, for example, around something as important as child sexual exploitation or around domestic violence cases, you need to have good channels of communication. It is an almost byword how bad it is, how difficult it is to locate the right person in the NHS to talk to improve the flow of information. What we're seeing, I believe, is an act of deliberate vandalism to our police service. And every public meeting I go to says exactly what you've been saying. We need more police officers, not less. I think we have a really efficient force now. They're very effective. We need to maintain that now. And we need to ask for a moratorium on the cuts to the police budget so that we can bed in the changes that we've made, continue to measure everything that we do and make sure that we continue that effectiveness. But give us, you know, really give us the chance to show that the changes that we've made are saving money.
And once again, I asked you before, I'll ask you again, what can people do to help?
Well, they can write to their MPs, they can ask their candidates, if there are hustings that they hear of, go and ask them what they think about the cuts, and in particular the cuts to the police budget, and challenge the political parties around what they will do to help the police service.
Thank you very much for joining us. Will you stay on the line?
Thank you very much, Pete. I'll stay for a very short while, if you don't mind. I'm suffering from the flu.
No, I meant just to give Jonathan wants a quick word.
Of course I will.
You get better soon.
Thanks a lot.
All right, thanks, Jane. And Jane's worked incredibly hard today to put that message over. Incredibly hard. Let's take a break.